Hello, you are listening to CITR Docs Season 3, Keep It Local, a collection of audio documentaries that explore current affairs topics in Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. These documentaries were made by producers at CITR 101.9 FM, the University of British Columbia's campus and community radio station, located on unceded Coast Salish Musqueam territory. This series was made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. To hear more CITR Docs from this season or previous seasons, look up CITR Docs on Stitcher or iTunes, or visit citr.ca/docs.
On March 10, 1959, Tibetans rose up in Lhasa to protect His Holiness the Dalai Lama from perceived threat. As a result, the Chinese army, still in the process of colonizing Tibet, opened fire on innocent Tibetans, killing thousands. This audio documentary brings listeners outside Vancouver's Chinese consulate, where Tibetan Canadians gather every March 10th to honor those slain on Uprising Day in 1959, and to demand an end to ongoing human rights abuses inside Tibet today.
These are scenes outside the Chinese consulate on Granville and 16th. It's March 10th, and Vancouver's small but coordinated Tibetan community is marking Uprising Day, as they do every year. In 1959, Tibetans rose up in their nation's capital, Lhasa, in an effort to protect His Holiness the Dalai Lama from perceived threat. Tibet's colonizer, the People's Republic of China, had grown concerned over the Buddhist leader's power over the Tibetan people. Tibetans feared the Chinese would try to take His Holiness's life. As crowds gathered to protect the Dalai Lama in Lhasa, the Chinese army opened fire on masses of unarmed Tibetans, killing thousands. March 10th marks the end of Tibet's remaining sovereignty from China. In 2008, the year China hosted the Beijing Olympics, a series of uprisings also took place in resistance to Chinese rule, which were met, once again, with violence and arrests by the Chinese state. Since 1959, the Tibetan diaspora has remained scattered across the world. Every March 10th, Vancouver's Tibetan Canadian community gathers outside the Chinese consulate on Granville Street to both fight for human rights in Tibet and to honor those who have given their lives to resist Chinese colonization. This is where the demands become louder. While at the protest, the Democracy Watch team met Laden Tatong. She has been attending the Uprising Day protests in Vancouver at the same spot since she was a kid. We asked her about the significance of the protest.
So my name is Laden Tatong, and I am here protesting for Tibetan freedom and for Tibetan independence from Chinese rule. I grew up actually here. I don't live here anymore, but I grew up on Vancouver Island, coming here every year to protest with my family, with our very small but very feisty Tibetan community here in Vancouver, coming to this very location outside the Chinese consulate to demand freedom and to shine a light on them for what they're doing in Tibet, for the human rights violations, all the things that they hope the world will not see or will forget. In terms of what they're doing to 6 million Tibetans inside Tibet over the past six decades. Every year when we come here, we let this day serve as a reminder both of the history that Tibetans inside Tibet rose up March 10th, 1959, and that led to the escape of the Dalai Lama, but also to bring attention to the issue and the ongoing occupation, the repression, but most importantly, the resistance that continues even to this very minute inside Tibet.
How has the resistance here in the Lower Mainland or in Vancouver and Victoria and the reaction to it, either from the public or the Chinese embassy and their representatives, changed, or has it?
Yeah, it has changed. You know, So I will never forget standing outside this Chinese consulate. We had a 24-hour vigil one time, and people driving by yelling, like, just things. People just did not understand the issue. They didn't. That was in the 80s, say, maybe mid or early 80s. People didn't really know the issue. They did not know the Dalai Lama. Only occasionally were people sort of knowledgeable about what was happening in Tibet or even what Tibet was. And now it's really a totally different world. I would say not only is the Dalai Lama known globally and recognized by many people as an international figure of peace and as the leader of Tibet, but the rightful leader of Tibet, but people know about the political situation in a way, even if it's not a lot. The average person can tell you, oh yeah, you know, Tibet, right, there, China took the country. Like, they may not be able to give you all the details, but that level of knowledge and awareness has been hard won by continuous effort and activities and, you know, action by Tibetans all over the world and in Tibet.
The rally that ended up outside the Chinese consulate on Granville Street began with speeches earlier in the afternoon in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery. Lardin was one of the speakers.
I was talking about this incredible struggle where 6 million Tibetans, against all odds, faced off against one of the most powerful and populous nations on earth, are not only still alive, but still fighting, and rigorously. And if you think about the odds and you think of where we are now, it's really remarkable. China considers Tibet one of its core interests, one of its like most important issues. And that's crazy when you think that we're not only 6 million people, but we're Buddhist, for the majority of Tibetans are Buddhist, and our leader is a monk. So the fact that not only is the issue still alive, we're still fighting, but we're an international issue, like a global issue of concern. What I said today was that empires fall, rise and fall, and often when the people on the fringes of the empire struggle for their rights and for their freedom. And that, in that way, they know Tibet is very dangerous for them. And as long as the issue is alive and well, which it is, then they can't rest. And I think that is key and critical to us understanding the impact we can have as a few individuals. Small group here, small group in Boston, small group in New Delhi and Tokyo, and you name it, we're all around the world today. And the impact we and this small group of Tibetans have had in this world is huge, and on China.
The global reaction to the Tibetan cause may have changed, but there's been very little response from Chinese officials in Vancouver. Lardin told us about the only time she has ever seen anyone in the Chinese consulate acknowledge the passionate protesters outside their gates.
For the most part, they avoid us at all costs. I remember when I was young, standing here and really having like a moment where I saw a few Chinese men behind the gates there smoking and laughing at us. And just thinking about all that was lost by all these people. At that time, my grandmother was alive here in Vancouver. And, you know, her whole family, her children got trapped in Tibet after 59. And just that moment, it felt like that was kind of the most engagement we ever had. To now, you know, I would say Chinese Canadians or overseas Chinese students, they don't necessarily join us or support us. I think some do, but they can't do it openly. I think many more are conflicted about this issue or maybe even totally against us because of the propaganda that they've been raised with their whole lives. And I was saying earlier to someone, I would challenge all the young Chinese who don't like us or don't think Tibet is a legitimate issue. I bet you they're young people who know that the Communist Party and the Chinese government has a lot of things wrong with it and know that they get lied to on a lot of issues. And if that is possible and all the other issues that I know they care about, then chances are it's probably true on Tibet. And I would just challenge them in a free and open society to look into this on their own. Because I know certainly all of us have had to face Chinese propaganda on Tibet, have had to look at China's version of events, have had that thrust in our face over our lives, even still today. And we understand it. We understand where it comes from. It's important that they do the same.
Almost 60 years since the violent events in Tibet gave rise to Uprising Day, it is the young generation of Tibetans who help keep the cause alive. The March 10th rally in Vancouver was largely organized by a group called Students for a Free Tibet. We spoke to one of the organizers, Tenzin Yuren. She is a high school student and grew up in a Tibetan community in India before moving to Vancouver. We asked her how much the average Canadian understands about the situation in Tibet.
Quite a lot of people know what's going on in Tibet and all that, more than what I've expected, because I also used to live in Singapore, so hardly anyone knew about it. But here, there are a lot of people who know about like what's happening in Tibet. I attend school, and there's this girl in my school. Her name is Lhasa. And I was kind of shocked to find out her name is Lhasa, because Lhasa is the capital city of Tibet. And first I thought it was just a coincidence, but she told me that, I asked her what her name means. She said it's actually the capital city of Tibet. And I was like, people actually know about Lhasa. I mean, for people to know about Tibet, yeah, I mean, Tibet is a country, but Lhasa is a city. So for someone to be named Lhasa is kind of a huge deal.
And as part of the Students for a Free Tibet, do you as a group organize many protests, or how do you engage and bring this issue up with like Canadians?
As you can see, there are a lot of signs here. Everything was made by SFT. And as for like bridging the gap between Canadians and Tibetans, like this interview, and there have been other interviews that other members of SFT have done.
One of the complaints that people had was that they usually have these protests, but then there is very little response from the Chinese authorities. Have you, in your experience while protesting, ever been confronted by the Chinese authorities where they've responded to any of your agitations?
No.
And why do you think this happens?
When it first started, I think everyone was shocked. But we've been doing this every year, and I think people just got used to it. People are starting to ignore it. And the more ignorance there is in the world, the more desperate we become. We want our freedom.
Tenzin says Canada offers the political freedom that the Tibetan community needs to highlight humanitarian violations happening in Tibet. And that freedom motivates her to continue fighting for a free Tibet. How do you see yourself being involved in this cause while staying in Vancouver in the months that come along?
Well, I feel like I have more power here in attending the marches and everything. In India, while we did march and all that, there was like hardly any response from like the society itself. In a sense, like, if we were marching, no one actually cared, because they see this every day. But I think over here, people don't really see it a lot, and when we do march, they just get really surprised, and they're like, what's happening? They're filming it, and I feel like this kind of brings like more coverage to the society, because social media is a huge thing. They're filming it, they put it out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that, so I feel like this has more impact.
In Canada, the Tibetan struggle is gradually moving from street protests to policy and government chambers. The Democracy Watch team met Maddie Burnaby, a member on the board of directors for the Canada-Tibet Committee. A backpacking trip to Tibet in 1988 is what sparked her activism for the Tibetan cause. And now, after 30 years, Maddie is lobbying political parties and government institutions to keep China's businesses in line with Canada's environmental and human rights responsibilities.
We got letters of support this year from all three of the major parties, NDP, Conservative, and Liberal, expressing support and solidarity on March 10th. And so I read those three letters, and all were very strong and very knowledgeable. And to me, that speaks to the success of that aspect of the work that NGOs are doing, but also Tibetans on a global, globally.
And Maddie is seeing some progress. Her lobbying has led to some accountability in British Columbia's mining industry.
It wasn't directly a complaint to the Chinese government, but what we did was lodge a request for review to Canada's contact point for the OECD around China Gold International, complaining that they appear to be in breach of OECD guidelines on human rights and environment. The company didn't comply, and they didn't agree to communicate, didn't agree to mediation, and the contact point made an unprecedented ruling that said that and they couldn't come up with a finding on China Gold because China Gold refused to participate. That belligerence and refusal to participate in any way meant that they were held to account in Canada. China Gold is a BC-based company, though it's owned and operated by Chinese Beijing-based people who are mostly high-level people connected with the communist, you know, the Communist Party of China. The consequence that they faced was that the Canadian government has now barred them from any of the supports that Canadian companies might get from government. Things like joining the club on Canadian trade missions to foreign countries. So, and that was a major slap in the face for them. It didn't sort of necessarily cost them dollar-wise, but shame and losing face and losing a whole array of contacts, it was a major blow. So they are no longer allowed to go on any Canadian government or BC government related trade missions. You know, they're not allowed to be part of that entourage anymore.
You've been listening to a story on how the Tibetan community in Vancouver marked the uprising day on March 10th. This was brought to you by Alex DeBoer and me, Rahmatullah Sheikh.